Right now, though, I want to get some more reaction to this report and also some reaction on a somewhat personal level here to another interesting development today following the release of the report, that being a list of 10 individuals who are now banned for life from the Liberal Party of Canada. Now, our next guest somewhat surprisingly found himself on that list. So joining us to talk about all the events of today, we're pleased to welcome back to this program Burrell Wiseman. He is president of the Institute for Public Affairs of Montreal. Burrell, good to talk to you again. Welcome back to the program.
Rob, thanks. Always good to talk to you.
All right, well, let's cut right to the chase here, Burrell. At what point did you realize you were on this list, and what was your initial reaction?
It was a really hysterical day because the first part of the day was very calm. I hadn't been named in the report, mm-hmm. nor did I expect to be, because I never received what was called a Section 13 letter. Just for your viewers to be aware, the Inquiries Act that set up the commission mandates that if anybody is to be named for blame, they have to receive a letter under Section 13 saying, this is what we could blame you for, please respond.
Right.
So I never got that letter. And indeed, in the report, I'm mentioned in two places, strictly as a matter of fact, of attending one meeting and being somewhere else at another, and that was it. And people wanted my comments, CBC had come to interview me, and around 2:30 came this extraordinary statement by Martin and then LaPierre, and 6-7 networks just arrived at my office. And as I told one of them, I said two things at the very beginning. I said, well, first of all, as Harry Truman says, you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. I can certainly take the heat, and I fully intend to stay in his kitchen. Second of all, it's rather a compliment. This is not a party that anybody should want to be a member of. My inclusion on the list was strictly because, as you well know, for over a year I have written against the concept of a commission to look into this. And I've always felt this to be a deflection from Martin's own problems and conflicts of interest that became apparent from September 2003 to February 2004 when the Auditor General's report came out. You want to make a commission to look into government corruption, all well and good, but make it a commission, not a one-man show, a judge that's hired by a prime minister, and pretend that that's going to be objective, and make it so one-sided and so narrow a mandate that evidence is excluded at will. So it really doesn't mean very much.
Now, you, of course, as you mentioned, I mean, your name is mentioned in the report in the sense that, you know, as a matter of fact, you testified.
Two places.
Yep.
Judge Gomery says, of course, that I was at that famous Burrell lunch.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't say I took the money.
Right.
In fact, the implication is that somebody else did. He does mention that he didn't like the fact that I exhibited excessive loyalty to Mr. Marcelli, and I didn't like Mr. Burrell. And that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And the second point was that he said that obviously I had a conflict with Mr. Desand, and Desand resented the fact that I had a mandate directly from the political minister of Quebec as a consultant to bring in social action groups and cultural communities into the party. Statements of fact. No adjectives, no nothing. Now, what I found curious about the report is Judge Gomery says that he finds Mr. Guitté and Mr. Brogue extremely credible. Except what he finds credible is very selective. Example, Mr. Guitté, in his first testimony at Gomery in Ottawa, not in Montreal, said that the only minister who had intervened directly into his sponsorship running was the finance minister at the time, Paul Martin. In Montreal, Mr. Guitté then added Jean Chrétien as well. We know from the original whistleblower, Alan Cutler, the bureaucrat, that a senior aide to Mr. Martin intervened twice in the sponsorship program for money, in 94 and 96, and he produced those letters. We know that in 2000 or 2001, from other testimony, uncontradicted testimony, another senior aide to Mr. Martin asked for $1 million for someone who was running and hosting $1,000 a ticket cocktails for Mr. Martin. We know that Mr. Martin himself said that he signed off on the Canadian Unity Funds. He was vice chairman of the Treasury Board. So what is this really all about? How is it that Judge Gomery finds certain evidence credible and completely is silent on the balance of the evidence? Mr. Burrell and Mr. Guitté are both facing criminal indictments. Now, as any prosecutor will tell you, anybody facing criminal indictments will spray gun blame all over the place. So what did Gomery show us? Absolutely nothing.
And what do you read into that?
Well, exactly what I wrote in November 2004 and February 2005, before my name was even brought up, that this was meant to be a deflection from the issues that kept popping up in the newspapers about Mr. Martin and his own situations. Example, the $167,000 in contracts to Canada's Seach employees suddenly turned into $167 million. Big 8-point headline in the Globe and Mail. Mr. Martin calls it an accounting error. Well, fine, that's an accounting error. $30 million in contracts to Ernst Strategies, where 9 of his top aides worked. Supposedly open bid contracts. House Public Accounts Committee has now determined that each of those contracts had one phrase in it, one line, one condition that only they could meet. Guarantees from the EDC to Air Wisconsin so that they could buy 6 jets from Bombardier, whose lobbyist was Mike Robinson, Mr. Martin's national campaign co-chair. And Mr. Robinson admitted this on CTV, but he said he never talked to Mr. Martin, only his chief of staff. Tax changes. Retroactive tax changes to tax haven rules that allowed Mr. Martin, while finance minister, to have CSL companies transferred to Barbados. All this were issues. All these were issues that were coming up from September 03 to February 04 and were very much issues in Quebec during the election. So where is the inquiry into that? For that matter, where is the inquiry into the $2 billion gun registry that was so useless? Where's the inquiry into the $165 million that Hewlett-Packard ripped off from the Department of National Defense last year? This was a political ploy. This is not... And the sad thing is that Canadians are a good and generous people, but they have to find their moral courage again. Whatever one may have thought of Trudeau... You know, by the way, I'm not taking any lessons from Jean Lapierre as to what it means to be a liberal, not from a co-founder of the Bloc. Whatever one might have thought of the politics of Pierre Trudeau, he left us with one thing, the Charter of Rights. The Charter of Rights is a check from the Government of Canada to the people that cannot come back NSF. And Section 7 of that charter says, all actions of the government, all actions of the judiciary, shall be based on fundamental justice, which has been defined in the Smithcomb decision and others, as strict adherence to due process. In other words, you're not supposed to call commissions like this. There's wrongdoing, let the RCMP do their work. I spoke to the RCMP before I went to Gomery, to the Gomery lawyers. I called them into my office. I showed them every document that I had that Desan claimed didn't exist. Every check I'd given, every official credentials that I was representing the party. I have often found that security officials, be they military, be they police, have more respect for the rule of law than politicians who play fast and loose with it. We have a system in place, due process, that protects the privacy of individuals, the reputations of individuals. Not creating a sideshow, a McCarthyite sideshow, that ruins reputations. If you remember that wonderful, it's very curious that this week the movie Good Night and Good Luck, the story of Edward Murrow's clash with Joseph McCarthy, opened in theaters in Canada. And if you remember one of Murrow's last lines when he had finished his fight with McCarthy, and he looked into the camera and he said, "If we do not wake up as a nation, then our epitaph will be that of what Shakespeare wrote in Julius Caesar, 'The fault, dear Brutus, lies not in the stars but in ourselves.'" We Canadians have to understand that our country is being robbed. It has not only been a compromise of the judicial system, not only a compromise of the Charter of Rights, but this government is planning next month to bring in legislation demanding that companies like Bell, Videotron, Shaw, providers of internet services, keep email records and internet telephony records, which they have to deliver at simple request with a probable cause to state security authorities. This is the same government that wants to decriminalize marijuana, yet in that same bill will allow random stopping of motorists without probable cause. This is the same government that's introducing Bill C-53, ostensibly to crack down on certain hardened criminals to seize their assets, but in that law reverses the presumption of innocence, which is the fundamental basis of Anglo-Saxon law. People in Canada have to wake up and understand where we're living. Mr. Martin today, particularly in my case, or Mr. Lapierre, whoever's idea it was, has created an enemies list. And it matters not whether he wins the next election. Nixon won the 72 election too. But he had an enemies list, and the government simply collapsed of its own corruption. It cannot exist because people have a threshold beyond which they'll stand up and say, "Hey, I want my country back."
What was your reaction then as you saw our Prime Minister sitting there today, all smiles, pointing out more than one occasion, and I guess we all saw it in the report, his name and the word exonerated appearing in the same sentence, that he is squeaky clean, that he's the guy to fix the system, and that's exactly what he's been doing. As you hear all of that and see all of that, Burrell, doesn't quite jive with reality, does it?
It's not at all reality, but it's exactly what I expected a year ago when I believe I sent you one of my first papers on it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you read that section of the report, you have to read it very carefully, because Judge Gomer used very interesting language. He said the Prime Minister has to be exonerated because he says he wasn't in the loop, and if you're not in the loop, how can you know what's going on? Well, he's suggesting that ignorance is a defense. The law says ignorance is not a defense. So if you're some poor guy, working stiff, who gets drunk and does something and doesn't know that what he did was illegal, the courts will say ignorance is no defense. Do we have a double standard in this country? Is ignorance a defense for the Prime Minister? Not that I believe he was out of the loop. You cannot sit at a cabinet table for 10 years as Vice Chairman of the Treasury Board, as Minister of Finance, knowing where every dollar is going and not know what's being spent. We never met. I'm not suggesting that Mr. Martin knew about the inflated bills, but remember what Mr. Martin said when he called the Gomery Commission. He said, if I am shown to have even knowledge of the program, I will resign. Not knowledge of the misdeeds of the advertising companies, which none of us knew about.
Mm-hmm.
Knowledge of the program. 6 different occasions he's been shown to have knowledge of the program. How was that just glossed over and eliminated? Can Canadians not understand that they're being sold a bill of goods?
We shall find out. Burrell, let me get you to hold the line here. We're going to come back. I've got to take a break here. We'll talk a bit more about this, the likely fallout from all of this. What we heard today, and as Burrell points out, what we didn't hear today, what we haven't been hearing about for some time, when we start to hear about some of these other issues. We're speaking with Burrell Wiseman, president of the Institute for Public Affairs of Montreal. Their website, by the way, www.iapm.ca. It's Rob Breckenridge, The World Tonight. We're back after this.
Start.
A look at the Gomery Report and the bigger issue of political corruption as we speak with Burrell Wiseman, president of the Institute for Public Affairs of Montreal. I want to ask you this as well, Burrell. I mean, it was an open secret for a long, long time that Paul Martin had his eyes on the Prime Minister's office and was actively organizing to make sure that that happened. This is what strikes me as odd about his ignorance defense. Address that point, if you could, as you understand how the Liberal apparatus in that province was working and how Paul Martin was asserting his control over it, yet seemingly unaware of what was going on in his own province.
Oh, gladly. And this is something I addressed in an interview in Le Devoir in Montreal some months ago. Paul Martin was completely aware, so was his organization, of what was going on. Not of the sponsorship companies, but of how the money worked. And in this interview, I said the only parallel financing structure in 2001, in the 6 months that I was at the party, were the people arranging money for Paul Martin. Huge amounts of money were raised at private parties and private homes. And this double standard has to stop. Because even today, after the Campaign Election Reform Act, where you get $1.75 for every vote, if you elect one MP, you get a full budget, you're a full party. Mr. Martin has had 2 dinners that I know of in Toronto that have been reported in the Globe and Mail. I'm not saying anything that hasn't been public, by the way. One talks about connecting the dots, your previous speaker. Well, connect these dots. He's attended 2 dinners at $5,000 a head in private homes. Why? We don't need private money in politics anymore. There's a very simple solution. You make all contributions non-existent. You create a checkoff system, which we basically have with the $1.75, and anybody who organizes a riding association, whether it's a Liberal Party or a Conservative Party or an Independent Party, gets the same amount of money for that association from a public fund. Yes, we'll have much less commercials on television during elections. Politicians will actually have to go out onto the stump and speak to people. But it's a very simple solution. I don't understand why we need money in this kind of money in politics. Mr. Martin visited the offices of the headquarters of the Liberal Party of Canada in Quebec twice when I was there, if not 3 times. He saw me. We've met at the St. Patrick's Day parades. He knew exactly my project with the cultural communities. He knew I had nothing to do with the ad companies, which Gomery bore out. I'm sure he and his advisors particularly didn't like is the fact that for the past year, year and a half, I have not liked his policies. This is not small-L liberalism. And I have not liked the idea of a commission and it's an attempt basically to shut me up, and it's unfortunate, and it won't work, and it will be the basis of an even more concerted campaign that I will make nationally to get our country back into our hands.
Where does that start? Where do we start with that, Burl?
Well, we start by creating a new political party, which forms are on my desk. We have 7,000 volunteers across the country, 2,500 of whom are presidents of their own organizations of at least 500 people. We have a platform to simplify government, make it smaller, get it out of our hair, get it back to the core business that it should be doing, get it out of the business of corporate welfare, get it out of the business of touchy-feely, vote-grabbing pork barrel programs, get money moving where it should be, into the pension plan, more into health care, doubling our defense budget. But fully one-third of our federal budget, Rob, a third, is spent on corporate welfare and vote-grabbing social engineering projects. Now, the most conservative members of my board, who are major businessmen, tell me that no more than $10 to $15 billion is necessary in corporate subventions to keep Canadian companies competitive. 2 years ago, that number stood at $47 billion, with another $25 billion spent on all of these kind of, the whole multicultural social engineering complex. We don't need to do that. We can reduce that. We can put money into health care. We can put money back into the Canada Pension Plan, double our military budget, and give Canadians a $17 billion tax rebate, which will mean if somebody's earning $50,000 a year and owes the government $10,000, the federal government, they'll owe it $7,000. Let the people decide what to do with their money. It's not up to the government to tell Canadians what to do with their passions and poetries. So you start by getting back to the basics, because Canada really has got to get back to the basics. I don't think anybody's going to forget that last weekend of the last election when Mr. Martin went from St. John's to Vancouver promising everything to every little group that was screaming for votes and writing checks all over the place. Except all these wonderful pronouncements, nobody reads the fine print. All that comes like 5 years from now. The fact that it's not necessary is beside the point.
I wanted to talk about, come back to the issue of whistleblowers for a second. I mean, it's interesting. Yeah. You say they want to shut you up. There's a whole lot of people that they want to keep quiet. I want to talk about one, and you mentioned Alan Cutler a little earlier. He's a very interesting individual. I wanted to ask you, first of all, I mean, have you spoke with Alan Cutler? Do you know him personally?
I've never met him.
Is that right?
But I must say, I've been watching his reactions today, and what I find interesting is that Mr. Cutler, his first serious revelations were those two letters from the senior staffer to Mr. Martin. And he seems satisfied with a report that exonerates, in quotation marks, one of the prime ministers that he was complaining about.
Mm-hmm.
He complained about Mr. Krachan's personnel's interference as well. But that was a very dramatic moment. I don't know if you remember it. I'm sure many of your callers do. When he presented those two letters at the House Public Accounts Committee, as early as that. So I'm rather surprised that Mr. Cutler is so pleased with this. It's not good for the health of this country. It's not good for the health of a liberal democracy to have one man hired by one prime minister make a judgment about a whole group of people.
Have we done anything to make it easier or to prevent governments from shutting up the folks like Alan Cutler?
Well, this is another problem. Mm-hmm. This government is going to introduce the whistleblower bill. Reg Alcock has said he's going ahead with it in the next couple of weeks, except this whistleblower bill has a number of faults. First of all, it only protects civil servants, doesn't protect people in the private sector. Second of all, civil servants can only complain to their direct superior, who may in fact be the person causing the problem. In other words, they can't go to the commissioner. Third of all, it provides no legal fund for the whistleblower in case they need legal protection, as the American legislation does. Fourth, the wrongdoer is never identified. And fifth, there's no public hearings. So this is a very, very weak whistleblower bill that's really not going to protect anybody. The two things we need to do, one thing we need to do and one thing we need to guard against, as I said, money's got to come out of politics. And it can through a checkoff system. We don't need to have political parties spending $23 and $25 and $21 million on election campaigns. We're only 30 million people. We're like the state of California. That's number one. But number two, what we have to guard against is what's going to come in Judge Gomery's recommendations, because I bet you dollars to donuts that what's going to come out of the recommendations is the following. That, in essence, you won't be able to buy a toilet seat without three committees. That means government's going to be frozen. That means that the Prime Minister, whoever he may be, is still going to be able to go to private parties at $5,000 a head. But any social action advocates who call an MP for something, the MPs are going to run for cover. governed by people who no longer know right from wrong.
Well, it's a good place to leave it, Burl. We'll see if anything along those lines come of this, but...
Of course it will.
We shall, well, you're optimistic, then.
I'm optimistic because this is a challenge. Rob, I have made a challenge on several networks in the East. I'll make it on your show. I will debate Mr. Martin, Mr. Lapierre, or Judge Gomery anywhere, anytime they like on where this country should be going under their terms and conditions. But they have done a great injury to this country.
Well, I don't know if that would count as money as money in politics, bro, but I'd pay to see it.
Yes, sir.
It's always good talking to you, Burl. Thanks so much for your time here tonight. All best to you, sir.
Thank you, Rob.
All right, Burl Wiseman, he is president of the Institute for Public Affairs of Montreal. IAPM.ca is their website. So he's certainly an interesting fellow, and it was somewhat surprising to see him, you know, linked up in this way, that there was nothing to say that Burl did this or Burl did that, or Burl's a nasty guy, or Burl was, you know, messing around or anything like that. And all of a sudden, yep. We got 10 guys, they're out of the Liberal Party for good. No, that's it. And he was one. Now, as Burl said, he was a member of the Liberal Party for all of 6 months back in the 90s. Was involved in some work with the party, and that's been it. And no desire on his part, certainly, to be a part of the party.